ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's happening on the big screen and the small? What to watch?
Joining us for a look at big and small screens is Wenli Ma, Nightlife's critic. Wenli, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello.
Well, let's get into it. First up, Spider Noir. This is, I guess what it sounds like. It's got Nicolas Cage in it. It's got to be pretty good, I suppose. Then
not a guarantee for a Nicolas Cage project.
Oh, okay.
He does so much.
True. Power Ballad, which is a comedy drama on TV.
Movies.
On the movies, okay.
At the movies.
And a film which is at least one chain, I think, is advertising it quite strongly. It's a French film called The Richest Woman in the World. It's got Isabelle Huppert in it, so therefore it must be good, in my view. But anyway, let's get there. Let's start with Spider Noir. What's this?
So this is actually in the Spider-Man Marvel universe, sort of, adjacent to. So just to backtrack a little bit, there's an animated film called Into the Spider-Verse. This came out a few years ago. It's actually excellent. And in it, Nicolas Cage voiced a character, a version of Spider-Man called Spider-Man Noir. So it's a version of Spider-Man that comes from a film noir world. And it was so well received that the powers that be basically said, let's see if we can't get him to do his own spin-off slash version of it, but let's make it live action and not animated. So it is a Spider-Man where he plays a version of Spider-Man who is in his 50s, 60s. He's washed up. He hung up his web slings years ago after a personal tragedy. There's always a personal tragedy. It's set in the 1930s. It's Depression era, New York City. He's, you know, spoken about basically pulling from the Humphrey Bogart version of Chandler's characters. Mm-hmm. So the references here are like The Maltese Falcon and The Big Sleep. It is a film noir version of it. It's actually quite good. I wasn't sure what to make of it because I quite liked Nicolas Cage's little voice cameo. And because Nicolas Cage, yes, he sometimes makes some absolutely dreadful slop, but every now and then you get this wonderful streak from him of fun, interesting, like he doesn't repeat himself that often. You're not going to find him in really bland mainstream projects. And he just has this ability to work with an interesting filmmaker and elevate what he's in because he's so committed. And I really enjoy watching like a superhero slash, you know, a reluctant one who is a little bit tired. You know, he can't move as fast, even though he still, you know, slings around with his webs with great theatrics. And I really like film noir, so it was really nice to have those touches. Interestingly, they are releasing this in two different versions. There is a black and white version and almost like a Technicolor version. Okay. And I have to say, they both look amazing. I watched it.
This is on telly, isn't it?
This is going to be on Amazon Prime. Okay. And so both versions will be released at the same time. I watched it sort of alternatingly because I thought I would, you know, be committed to the black and white version just because of the genre that it's riffing off. Mm-hmm. But the color version actually looks so good as well. Brendan Gleeson is in it. He's kind of the main villain. Lee Jung-Li, who's an American actress, has been in like Babylon and stuff. Yeah, so much better than I expected.
How many parts to it?
There are, I think it's 8 episodes. It's 8 or 10.
Okay.
I want to say it's 8.
It's on Amazon Prime. It's a TV show, Spider Noir. Here's a bit from it.
Have you seen it out there? The city's a mess. You used to be.
I know who I used to be. I know who I am now. I'm starting over.
Are you going to be a dick about it?
Yes, actually, a private dick, to be exact.
My friend disappeared. You're an investigator. Investigate. And I turn a troubled child. Are we going to talk about the fact that her friend turned into some kind of sand monster? Just seems like kind of like a big deal.
What the hell is going on? I can't
can't get into it right now.
All I know is that once it starts, it gets worse fast. Until their sicknesses eat them alive.
Sounds right, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a combination that I think I wouldn't have expected. Mm. Film noir, Private Eye, Spider-Man, Nick Cage.
Mm.
And yet somehow it works.
Back to Black soundtrack too.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right, stars?
3.5.
3.5, okay. Now, Power Ballad. This is a comedy. This is also on telly. Whereabouts?
It's in the films. It's in the cinema.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this comes out on this Thursday. Okay. It is by an Irish filmmaker named John Carney.
Mm-hmm.
He made Once about 20 years ago. He made Sing Street, Flora and Son. If you notice the themes in the joining themes in those films is that he makes movies that have music in them. And what I really like about John Carney is that he makes music so intrinsic to his characters and their reason for being. And Power Ballad, as you might have guessed from this title, is also about music.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two lead characters. Paul Rudd plays an American who used to be, you know, in an indie band, and then he fell in love with an Irish woman, settled down in Dublin. They have a teenage daughter. And now he plays in a wedding cover band. And at one of these weddings, he meets Danny Wilson, who's played by Nick Jonas, a real-life pop star as well,
mm-hmm.
of the Jonas Brothers. And he plays a former member of a boy band who hasn't quite launched his solo career yet. And he's, you know, had all this pressure to be like, what does Danny Wilson represent? What does he stand for? What does his solo career look like? And they hit it off and they have this jam session. And Rick, Paul Rudd's character, plays him this song, incomplete song that he's been working on for years. And it's called How to Write a Song Without You. And Danny is immediately like, oh my God, that song it's a banger. It's not finished, but it's a banger. Months pass and Rick is in a shopping center and he hears these chords over the speaker in the center and it's his song.
Oh.
Danny Wilson has stolen his song.
Wow.
And not credited him, not said anything. He took full credit for it. So it is about Rick trying to madly, illogically, to extreme sort of try to get recognized for his music, for this song, because he's a frustrated musician who has regrets about leaving behind this, you know, the life that he had imagined for himself when he was younger. And also Danny Wilson's thing where, you know, it's a full-blown imposter syndrome character arc. And I really liked it. And I think it's very likable. Rudd is obviously very likable. It's incredibly well cast. I think John Carney has a really good handle on tone and he can very easily kind of switch from earnest to farce. But the thing that to me that is very good about this is the song itself, How to Write a Song Without You. I think we watch a lot of movies and TV shows where it's about, say, a fictional comedian or a fictional super pop star, and their fictional work within the universe is often just, like, not that good. You're like, I don't understand why you're so famous. Your music is not that good. This is a really good song. It's been an earworm in my head for, like, 3 weeks.
All right, here's a little clip from the trailer.
You don't recognize it?
Should I?
Yeah, of course, yes, you should. That's my chorus and verse.
I wrote that song.
When?
Wow.
Danny Wilson.
You were great up there.
Come with me.
I could tell within 2 minutes of meeting you, you are not just some boy band guy.
And you are too good for that wedding band.
I've been toying with this one for years.
Is every song I ever wrote in my life? It's about you.
So good.
I just wanted it so bad, you know?
Having my name on that song would have changed my life!
What a good song can do, right? Has the ability to mean many different things to many different people.
Reminds me of that Beatles movie, doesn't it, about the bloke
who couldn't remember? Or who could remember, but everyone forgot.
Yeah. Right.
frustrating when you're the only one.
Power Ballad, what, stars?
3.5 as well.
3.5, okay. It's in the cinemas, all right. And The Richest Woman in the World, this is the one with Isabelle Huppert. It's a French film, but it's getting a bit of noise, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Isabelle Huppert, what an icon.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What an absolute icon. And I, yeah, anytime she does anything, I'm like, I'm going to see that. I don't even know what it's about.
I've been watching her in movies my whole life.
And she doesn't seem to age.
No.
She's just like... Yeah, amazing. Mm. And it's so interesting that they've cast her in this because she's an icon playing a fictionalized version of an icon. So they've changed the names, but this is essentially about Lillian Bettencourt.
It's a real story, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, her character's name is like Marianne Farrer, but it's about the Bettencourt scandal, which gripped French politics and really French society a few years ago, where the former richest woman in the world, who has since died, the heiress to the L'Oreal fortune, you know, her daughter sued essentially her or the man that she had as a companion friend for 20 years.
Well, she was worried because the mother was giving away a lot of her money.
She gave her away over €1 billion.
To people who the family regarded as a grifter.
Yes, to a younger man who was a photographer. He's a gay man, so it wasn't a sexual relationship. But certainly the daughter was like, what is happening? And so this is a fictionalized version of that. It is comedy because the director has talked about, like, it's very hard to make people empathize and feel sorry for incredibly rich billionaires. But there is something relatable still at the heart of this story. But the thing is, I think just because Isabelle Huppert is such an icon, once I got into the film, I stopped thinking of the character as Lillian Bettencourt, and just because Isabelle Huppert is a big, at least to me, is a bigger name. It's quite funny. It's very enjoyable. It's incredibly French, which, good thing, like, that's a good thing for in my books. Maybe it's not in yours. But also, it's just such an interesting story as well, and it sort of inspired me to go back and read a bit more about that and the way that it just enraptured and captured, like, everyone from, you know, in the interest of everyone, but also, like, Nicolas Sarkozy got wrapped up in it, and it's just, yeah, fascinating story.
The Richest Woman in the World. It's in cinemas right now. Here's a bit.
Vous êtes la femme la plus riche du monde, ça vous évoque quoi?
Riche, le mot n'est pas très joli. Fortuné, c'est mieux. Jérôme, avec ce bouquet, je ne vois pas Guy, si vous pouviez enlever tout ça. On se croirait à l'aéroport de Nobibu.
Je veux que cette photographie raconte parfaitement la femme que vous êtes.
C'est qui ce photographe?
Pierre-Alain Fantin.
Ce que je veux voir, c'est une héroïne.
Il a une réputation épouvantable.
Je ne photographie pas les gens, je les emporte.
Et voilà.
Ça me gêne.
Mais arrête de glapir, Guy.
Oui, c'est exact, vous glapissez.
That's your French.
My French is rusty.
Anyway, it's getting a bit of noise, isn't it? Stars?
3 stars.
3 stars for The Richest Woman in the World. All right, The Richest Woman in the World, that's in the cinemas, 3 stars. Power Ballad is in the cinemas, 3.5. This is about the washed-up wedding singer. And Spider Noir, which does sound pretty good, actually, is an 8-part series on Amazon Prime. That's 3.5 stars.
Yes.
Thanks, Wendley.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.